running isn't always going to be rainbows and sunshine. It was also like something that like I hated at times, but it's because it was bringing me closer to being connected with myself that I was really uncomfortable with. With a strong mind, we have unlimited potential.
That was Priscilla Forgy, and this is episode 185 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life.
In this episode, Edmontonian elite ultra runner Priscilla Forgy returns to the show to discuss her contribution to the new book, Run for Your Life. This book is an incredible collaboration of short stories written by 13 different runners, made possible by several sponsors from Alberta, Canada, including Run Calgary, Service Edmonton Marathon, and Five Peaks. It was within the pages of this book that Priscilla has chosen to share parts of her personal story that had remained completely repressed for most of her life, unrevealed even to her. In a chapter that reads more like poetry, she elegantly describes her thoughts and feelings as she moves along the trail and how her relationship with running has evolved and relates to healing the trauma of her past. Her writing elicits several emotions, and although she describes moments of darkness, the reader is left feeling uplifted as she speaks about moving into the light. Priscilla's goal is to start more open and honest conversations about the topic of childhood sexual abuse, and that is the simple goal of this episode. Over the next hour, we catch up on all the awesomeness that has been happening in Priscilla's race calendar over the last year and move into a very thoughtful conversation on her trauma and healing experience and how one can provide a safe place on the receiver side of the conversation should someone entrust you with their trauma story. We thank Priscilla for her bravery and her strength as she shares her story with us. Trigger warning, this episode does have references to sexual abuse.
Well, Priscilla, welcome back to the Inspired Souls podcast. It's going to be great to catch up with you again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here and back in the studio, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah. So before we dive into the meat and potatoes of this episode, we really want to just catch up. The last episode we dropped was July 18, 2023. So shortly after you completely crushed it at Western States, finishing top Canadian and eighth female. So what has happened since then? Like what's happened in the last 9 months or so?
I don't even know. Sometimes I'm like, what is time? So after States, I spent lots of time recovering, but then got pretty much quickly into the Rockies as much as I could because I did CCC in September. So CCC, and then, so I came in 12th woman. It was amazing. Tough out there. Oh man. Oh, thank you. That was like, you know, it's funny, like you look at just like a Western States trail and then CCC and they're just like polar opposites. Putting those into the same training block is so interesting. So I definitely learned so much. It was so beautiful out there. It was my first time in Europe. So it was a really cool experience.
And so just for our listeners who may not be aware, CCC runs through three countries, France, Italy, and Switzerland. And what does it stand for again? I'll let you say it.
So it stands for, I'm going to get this wrong. Courmayeur, where you start in Italy. Champagne, in Switzerland, and then in Chamonix, France. I'm like, oh man, am I going to get that wrong?
Yeah, no, I'm going to put you on the spot there, Kim.
Skill testing question, Kim, right off the gate.
Yes, I know. But the thing is, we do as trail runners just throw out these acronyms, CCC, but not everybody might know. Like, this is an epic, epic race. It was part of the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc Trail Festival, right? In late August? Last year, was it?
Yeah, I think it was on September 1st.
Oh, okay.
This year, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's beautiful. Sorry, Carolyn.
No, I was just going to say, you said it was polar opposite to Western States. So maybe in a nutshell, describe what made those two events so different.
Sure. So Western States is 100 miles and about, I want to say around 6,000 meters of elevation total. So you imagine just over the span of 100 miles, you're, I think it's actually less than that, even when I say it, maybe closer to 5,000. And very rolling terrain. There are some kind of higher elevation areas, but really for the most part, it's a very runnable course. And then you have CCC, which is 100 kilometers and about 6,000 meters of vert. So very different. Your lifeline is your poles, and you're just kind of like just waiting for the next down, which also kind of beats you up as well. So it's a, yeah, lots of climbing, very mountainous. So very, they're just very, very different. Very different, but both equally as wonderful in terms of the trails themselves. It's just like you, it, they're just like CCC was absolutely stunning. And being in Europe, it was very different. You're running through past restaurants and homes in the kind of in these mountainous areas in the middle of nowhere. People are outside drinking with their family and friends and just cheering you on in the middle of nowhere in these little mountainous areas. So it's really, really cool. It's definitely an experience, and I definitely recommend anyone checking out that area if they can.
Do you think you'll go back?
I do. I do think I will go back and try to do the whole UTMB feat. So I don't know when that will be. I don't really have that on my timeline as of right now. But my goal is to kind of just continuously go back to Western States at this point. So
okay. Yeah. So FAADE earned you a guaranteed spot at 2024 Western States. And I do know you are going. So yeah. What did the road to States look like once you checked CCC off your list?
Sure. Yeah. So again, lots of rest. And then I just did a 50K in Chuckanut in Bellingham, Washington. Great race as well. Totally recommend checking it out. Really beautiful trails, especially coming from Edmonton, Alberta after winter. It was so, so warm and lots of dirt on the ground and greenery all around you. So I just did that 50K. That was kind of just like a, I guess you could say kind of like a training race. And now I'm just kind of laying low until Western States.
Hey. Laying low and doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay. So last year you were 8th female at Western States. That's a pretty good result if you ask me. Will you just sort of repeat your same strategy as last year, or do you think there's anything that you'll do differently to tackle it this year?
I would say about almost everything in my planning and not necessarily training, but planning, or even actually my training as well, because I did 100K in April to get into Western State. So my training will be different as well, but my plans are very different going into it a second time this year. I learned so much the first time. I feel like everyone needs to kind of get cushioned with Western States for the first time. And then you are just like soaking up so much information afterwards. You just can't get not racing the course that first time. It was also new to me. So there was a lot of things I learned that I'm going to take into this upcoming year, which I'm really excited about. All I talk about is Western States.
So are you willing to share some of the things you learned, or is this part of your secret weapon?
No. I think it's really good for anyone to know going to Western States. If you have the ability, if you can get out there at least 10 days before, just to acclimatize, the altitude really kind of slapped me in the face once I got there, being in the high country. And I just knew after that I didn't want to suffer through the first 50K of 100 miles again this year. So that was a really, really big piece of my planning for this year, is to allocate those 2 weeks if possible. And then some different heat strategies that I'll be using just based on my own reaction to ice and cooling. I think it's really like, I can't really give advice because it's going to be different for everybody, but I think really honing in on what actually helps you cool, because you could think that it's ice, but it actually could be doing the reverse. And so, I learned a lot through that. just from Western States last year. I had ice on me the whole time and was boiling hot the whole time, and it was the coldest year.
Interesting. So you will have more than one pacer this year?
Definitely. Yes. That is the plan. I have my wonderful friend Jenny Quilty that will be pacing me for
friend of the pod
for part of it. Yeah. And then my partner again for the other part. I also have a backup friend that will be there. So I am like, I've got all, like, I'm way more planned than last year, which is kind of exciting. It's not usually what I do. I kind of do like more so going with the flow, but now knowing what I know, it's kind of an exciting experience just to bring all of those tools to this race. It feels like it's going to be a new race. So I'm pretty excited about that. The only other changes really I'll be making is just more fueling. I definitely didn't eat enough last year when I think about it. So just stuff like that. So
I didn't re-listen to your one in preparation for this. I probably should, but I remember two things. Your husband, didn't he like his light on his phone, like the battery died or something? And then weren't you just like fueled solely on Morton gels? Didn't you take
not like... solely on Morton? Oh, no, okay. I had Huma and Morton were my go-to.
Okay.
And those were great, but I just didn't eat enough. Like, and when I think about it kind of in retrospect, I'm like, oh, I could have really downed a lot more food and probably been even more kind of felt even better.
That's pretty classic. Like, yeah, people rarely regret eating too much during an ultra. Mm-hmm. It's always that I didn't get enough in, especially if it's hot. So who knows what the weather will be like this year.
Yeah, then that could honestly throw, because, you know, when I think about Western States, I'm thinking of it in a very specific way from my one experience. And so really, like, there could be a wrench thrown into it completely based on whatever the weather brings. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, though. I'm just like, bring it on, whatever happens.
That's the fun of ultra running is you never quite know.
Lots can happen over 100 miles.
Yes, exactly. Well, we'll be excitedly following along for sure. Okay, so the reason we really invited you on this podcast, yes, we love to catch up on all the running activities, but there was just a new book released called Run for Your Life, of which you are one of 13 collaborators in this book. And you wrote a chapter that talks about some past experiences and mindset with running that we'd like to explore a little bit on this podcast. So I want to ask you first, how did you come to be involved in this collaboration in the first place?
Sure. Yeah. So it was probably about around the time of actually Western States that I saw a post on Facebook about applications being accepted from the publishers for the book. And it was so like, no one sent it to me. It was really like, really not a lot of people had known about what was going on with me at that time, but I saw it and I just immediately was like, I need to apply to that. And the story that I wanted to tell was about my experiences with PTSD and PTSD from childhood trauma that had resurfaced just within the past couple of years. And so I knew it was a very sensitive topic, but I also felt like I had a knack for communicating my experiences and kind of getting them on paper in a way that it could be helpful for others and also healing for myself. And I think that, like, I knew that in telling the story, it would be like very revealing. It's a very intimate story to tell people. And I know that a lot of people were like, oh, are you sure you want to say that? Like, once you get it out, it's kind of out there for everyone to know. But it was almost like I had these memories come up when I was in my like 30 years old. And it was something that I'd kept in my body for so long. And it almost felt like I needed to get it out because I kind of repressed it for so long. It felt like it was weird. Like it just needed to happen. And I also knew the running community, and I know, you know, we all joke about running away from our problems, and we hear about so many recovering addicts and people with mental health struggles within the community, and how running is so transformative for them. And so I was certain that there were people that could relate to my story, but I was also certain that there would be people that could learn from it too. Mm-hmm. And I think that I wanted to do it for both sides of it, people that were victims of child sexual abuse, but also people that didn't know a lot about it. And I think that when we can connect, like we connect with people that we're similar with, but we can also connect with people that we're different from, mm-hmm. and learn from them. And we mm-hmm. grow so much. And I think that's why it's so important to tell these experiences to everyone and not just kind of small groups of people that also have the same experiences.
Well, you say this is where it started, but you went through quite a journey before you were even able to contemplate telling your story. Like really, it didn't start there. Running was a huge part of your healing process. The title, there's so many directions and questions that we could ask right now, but the title of your chapter is Finding My Fire. And you start out the prose, really, because really it was almost a poetic piece of prose that you wrote in this book. You talked about my brain is on fire at the very beginning, and how you were running through the trails of Javelina 100, feeling almost in a dissociative state, you know, trying mm-hmm. to reconcile your past with your present, with your future. And there was a period of time where things weren't easy for you. And so I guess my question in relation to that is, you chose to tell your story, and I want to thank you for that actually right now. It takes a lot of bravery. It takes a lot of courage. And it also takes a very giving heart to share a story that, like you just said, can help people on both sides of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But why did you choose to tell it to the running community specifically in a book called mm-hmm. Run for Your Life?
Well, firstly, thank you. Thank you for your kind words. The running community was such an integral piece of my journey. The running did not heal my trauma, and I would not want for anyone to think that running can do that. I just, like, complex PTSD could never be healed with just running. However, it was an integral part of my journey. And that's why I put even a dedication in the beginning of the book that the community got me out more times than they'll ever know. And it wasn't even like one specific person in the community, but it was everyone. I always felt like I was welcomed. And I always felt like it was also a place that I could go to almost like disconnect from my reality sometimes, and when I really needed to. And I know like I couldn't do that always. And that's kind of why I ended up telling the story, was I was like, you know, I'm coming out to these run groups and I'm seeing people in the running community, and they don't actually know what's going on, so I can't be my full authentic self. And I needed to do that at a time in my life. But I just felt like when I was ready, I would need to be able to show kind of my whole self. Because if you don't show your whole self, then you're not able to connect with people at the level that you'd like to. It just will never happen that way, because you're not being true to yourself. So yeah, and I just knew that there were people that would get something out of my story. We all have different unique experiences, but there are a lot of similarities in our experiences as well. And so I just wanted it to be something that we could talk about. Also, just the topic itself is something that I think is really important to talk about. And there's a kind of blessing with running where, in just the act of that movement, it opens up a lot of space. And so it just felt like that topic kind of could live in that space and be safe and be something that people feel comfortable talking about.
Yeah. So I think this is a perfect time to read a few quotes or excerpts from your part of the book that speak exactly to what you just are talking about right now. You talk about space. So here's one. It was never the mountain peaks, harsh weather, or the burn of lactate in my legs, but the stillness that scared me the most. Mm. And then you move on to say, one of the tools I eventually connected with most was anything but static. Again, the stillness, you wanted to be moving. I gravitated towards an unpredictable constant, a moving presence, an energetic calm. Running reshapes our souls with every pulsating step. It creates space for us to open ourselves to one another, building connections we never knew possible. And you express that so well in relatively so few words in this piece in the book, but it is also so true. And I know you're not the only runner who has experienced that fear of stillness. So talk to us about that a little bit. What kind of a relationship with running did you have at this time?
Oh my goodness. So I've had about, like, it feels like 10 different relationships with running since I've started. I know I've spoken with you guys in the past about my mental health when I started running, and that really running was something that really helped me through a lot of different mental struggles with depression and anxiety. But like, running can be so wonderful, but it can also be a huge distraction from our reality. And when I was experiencing symptoms of PTSD, I felt like I had said, my mind was on fire. I felt like I was a prisoner in my own body. There was so much going on that I wanted to escape. And running was actually kind of something that I actually didn't end up liking. Obviously in the chapter, I talk about kind of where I'm reconnecting with running and reconnecting with my body. But at kind of the height of my trauma, I didn't want to be alone. Running wasn't something I could run away from anymore, because I would have to run away from my mind, and that was there with me. And it didn't matter what podcast, what music, anything I put on, it still didn't distract me enough. And that was where things like run groups, really running with friends, sometimes just skipping runs in general was just what I had to do. But I ran a lot in discomfort. I wouldn't necessarily say that everyone, if that's kind of their, what will work for them, but I almost had to change my relationship with what running was to me. And it was almost like I accepted it was like an ebb and flow relationship, that running isn't always going to be rainbows and sunshine. It was also like something that like I hated at times, and I really like it, but it's because it was bringing me closer to being connected with myself that I was really uncomfortable with.
I have to interrupt you for a second and read something that is just so powerful. You wrote here, "The long miles mirrored the long healing journey ahead, slow, arduous, and not always comfortable. The time on my soles offered me time to reconnect with my soul."
And that's exactly what it was. It was time and being gentle with myself through that time. It took a long time. It wasn't something that I wasn't going to stop running. It was almost like the only thing keeping me going, even if I didn't like it, which it seems kind of weird. I didn't like a lot of things at that time in my life. There weren't a lot of things that could make me happy, but running was like a constant. It was just something that I was familiar with. And it really did. Every day I got closer to this one day when I went out for a run, and it was, I think it was like not a very nice day. There wasn't anything particular about the run. I didn't like have any sort of reason why this would have happened, but I went out, and it was actually the first time in probably like 6 months where I was like, I'm actually enjoying myself. Mm-hmm. And I was smiling the whole time, and I couldn't get the smile off my face. And I was just like ecstatic. Like, I can't believe this like 10K run was like the best. It feels like the best thing in the past 6 months that's ever happened to me. And it was, but it wasn't like that happened overnight. It was like this long, arduous journey of going through this like very strong discomfort getting to that point.
So you mentioned, like, I do remember you kind of alluding to trauma in our last interview, like just when you were introducing yourself and how you found running, sort of mentioning that. And it sounds from what you just shared that, you know, running kind of works as a distraction until it doesn't, right? And then you need to like up level and sort of confront new things. And in this case, being still is like harder in many ways than being on the move for us runners. And so I'm curious, like you said that there was a post or something about contributing to this book that you responded to, and you had almost like a full body, hell yes, I need to get this out of my body. Like this is my next, my way to level up and share and heal myself and possibly help some others in the process. So I'm not really sure what the question is, but can you describe what that feels like when you just get like almost a calling, like a, this is something I need to act on and follow up on? Like, it, is that kind of how it landed for you, or am I yeah, making things up?
That you're like 100% on point. It was one of those things. And if it ever happens, is when it doesn't matter, like you're almost like, you know, you're going to do it no matter what. And it doesn't matter about any external influences around you that you're already set. Like you don't, yeah, you're not going to message someone and say, should I do this?
Right.
You already know that it's like, mm-hmm, you feel it in your soul. It's something that's calling to you. And for me, like I get really like kind of get into a bit of a dungeon, like troll mode where before my races, I just kind of isolate. And I was in bed eating and typing, just because I knew that I didn't even know if I was accepted yet, and I didn't know how many applications were going in. I had no idea if they'd even want to hear my story. And I didn't actually like have much to give in my application because I didn't have a story yet, but I knew that it was going to get out no matter what, that if I didn't get accepted, that I was still going to put it out there. Mm. And I think that that's something that, it felt empowering for me to do something like that. And I think if anybody ever experiences something that makes them feel empowered and that, mm-hmm, way that they're driven and you're feeling so much passionate about it, that you won't procrastinate, you're just like full forced into it, then go towards that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I'm sure we can all think of moments like that, mm-hmm, in our lives, but I wanted to really hit on that point because I think these are the things, like this is kind of the universe's like sneaky way of getting you to act on things, right? It's just giving you, definitely, these powerful signs. But so Kim's read a couple of excerpts here, and I get goosebumps with the quality of the writing. Like, mm-hmm, are you a writer? Amen. Like, do you have experience writing, or talk to us about, was that scary to kind of not only put your vulnerable story out there, but yeah, you're opening yourself up and exposing yourself to some degree when you put thoughts on to paper.
Well, thank you so much. That's super kind of you. I think that, well, no, I'm not a writer. But I do write a lot. I think just over the past, particularly couple of years, a big part of my healing has been through writing. And that was prior to this story. I do a lot of poetry and just write my thoughts and stories. And I think that it's like one of those things again that drives me and that makes me feel really passionate. It's not like work for me to do that. And so you always know those are those things that, yep, you really love. And I knew that if I was going to put my story out, I wanted it to be a quality piece of work. I wanted to reel people in so that they actually really wanted to read the piece, because I felt like it was a really important topic to talk about, and not just for me. Like it wasn't about like, oh, here's my experience. And I didn't want any pity. That was at all what I was going for. It was really to, I don't know if it's like the optimist in me, but there's something about the running community that I feel like there's always like just so much potential for growth. And I think that we have, it's just such a wonderful place that I think that these type of things, these topics can be talked about in that space if we kind of open up about them.
Well, you know, whatever your community is, whether it's running, whether it's a work community, mm-hmm. a family community, you have to feel safe. And runners, mm-hmm. you know, we are a tribe in many, in many ways, especially the ultra running trail community, that niche environment of people who just get you. So I can totally see why you chose to come out, for lack of a better word, in this book, Run for Your Life. One thing you said to me when we were preparing for this podcast last week was you were talking about, I'm tired of pretending. When somebody asks me, how are you doing? Or how was that race? And you just say, oh, it's great. And it really wasn't that great. So, you know, I sense in this piece you wrote a real desire to be authentic and a pull towards authenticity. You quote Raven Saunders and you say, when you're an athlete, you live two lives. You have a life outside your sport and you have a life inside your sport. And then you go on to talk about how your heart longed to be honest and open, melding your two worlds together like two interlocking puzzle pieces to complete your new identity. So throughout this piece, you have a lot of metaphors so that one can visualize how you were feeling. But talk to us a bit about that. You know, do we like, do most of us show up as one person and then go home as a different person? Like, how can we mm-hmm. be more authentic in our mm-hmm. in our running and in our communities?
I love that question. I think it's something that I think about so much, and kind of taking me back to when I was in kind of the height of my PTSD, I wanted to live my life like everybody else was. And even my training as an athlete, I wanted to train like everybody else was in the same level as I was. And it wasn't until I recognized how embedded comparison is in like not only like the sports culture, but just our everyday culture and social media. I realized that how little it was serving me. I wasn't going to benefit from doing the same type of training as another athlete was at the same caliber as me, because they weren't experiencing what I was experiencing in my body. Just as the same as I wouldn't benefit from the same training as someone else that is experiencing something else, or really in the, for that fact, it's like really like that we are all so different. And it was when I started to embrace my uniqueness that I almost like wanted to talk more about stuff and be more authentic, because it was like the more authentic I was, the more excited I got about my own uniqueness. I wasn't trying to mold in with what other people were doing. And that in all spheres of my life. And it was kind of exciting, like almost thrilling. And I didn't do it overnight. It took me a long time to get there. But it was when I started realizing, wow, like how exhausting it is to scroll through social media and see someone and compare yourself to them when you have literally nothing in common, or you might not have nothing in common with that person. You have a completely different body, completely different stressors in your life, different work, different climate that you might be in. Like there's just so many differences that we all have. And those are really good things. Those are things that make us unique. And it can be, I understand it can be very difficult to fall into that. And I think that it's something that a lot of people suffer from. And so when I started to be more authentic and more truthful, I really tried to do that in kind of all aspects of my life.
I love this so much. Have you come to a place where you can just in being more yourself and embracing that uniqueness that is you, do you find that the comparison calms down to the point that you can be on social media and see what other people are doing for training and have it not be so triggering or upsetting?
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm human. And so what I notice instead is that I'm more aware. And so if I'm scrolling through social media and I see a post that triggers a thought that, oh, wow, I wish I had that, or I wish I looked like that, right? Then I stop and I sit with it. I think we spend so much time scrolling. And there's a lot of different thoughts that are coming up that we don't sit with and think about. But they sit in our bodies, they sit with us. And what I've been really good at now is recognizing when those come up. And that's okay. I kind of just say, I don't have that, but I have this instead. Or do I want that? Okay, well, how am I going to work to do that? Or what is that within my values to focus on that? I just try to, it's just that reframing of, like, those thoughts are going to come up regardless, I think, for all of us. And then just to identify and be aware of, okay, well, how am I going to let that lead the rest of the day?
Wow. It sounds like you've come a long way in your healing process, and I'm sure it will never be over. However, I'm going to ask you, has your running improved as you've gone through this psychological healing journey? And if so, how?
I would say that in my journey, my self-talk has improved. My views of myself has improved. My happiness in running has improved. And I really think all of those things trickle onto a physical level. I think that, like, I think I did a post the other day and I said that I really am certain that, I think for all of us, that a huge asset, like one of our best assets at a start line, could be our minds if we allowed them to. And I think it could be a very big detriment as well. And it has been for me in the past. And I think that with a strong mind, we have unlimited potential. And so that's kind of how I view it. And if that doesn't translate physically, then that's okay to me too. I am a happier, more whole person because of it.
Well, I guess that boats a question, like, how do you define better running? Is better running a result and a time, or is it a feeling and a quality and a experience? Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've been performing very well in the last, you know, several races that you've done. But yeah, I'm hearing that the mental strength side is really where you see changes and you're focusing on right now. Is that correct in saying?
Definitely. Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. I feel like my own therapy and healing is so transferable to the sports psychology world. And I'm like delving into sports psychology too. And I think that they can be kind of molded together so well. So I don't know. I think that's really exciting to me. And I think a lot of people could benefit from that. We focus so much on what is a strength routine I need to do, or maybe some better tempo, or what's my speed, all that stuff. But there's so much that we're missing with our minds. And It's kind of like that analogy, like plant flowers in your garden and water your garden. And I see that, like, with your mind, like, if you're planting weeds, or and that's by spreading negativity with yourself or to others, then those weeds are going to suffocate you. And, I think that, it does translate into how we end up feeling physically.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, your performances lately have been great. And you're going into Western States hoping for another stellar performance. And so I want to shift a little bit to your coaching, because coaching is really a huge part of this entire equation. With your experiences of childhood abuse, one could completely understand and even expect you to kind of shy away from male coaches. But yet your coach, you've chosen to be David Roach, who is a highly respected coach in our community. And I guess I'm going to ask you, first off, why did you choose David? And then tell us a bit about the coaching relationship and how that's evolved for you.
In the past, I had never wanted a coach. I was very focused on wanting to kind of just run free and just do my own thing, listen to my body. But I had listened to David on his podcast, and that was kind of when I wasn't very well. And it was just kind of, it clicked. I was like, I want him to coach me. I need someone that is much happier than I am at this point in my life. And I just wanted to grow my positive males in my life, ones that were supportive and non-judgmental and really lifted me up as a female. And that was just exactly what I got. And so I was really grateful that David took me on, and it's been a really great journey through that. And I think that's, again, it's just so like kind of back to like how we can connect and grow and learn through our differences. I would, in maybe a few years ago, have immediately chosen a female coach. And I am definitely supportive of course, anybody choosing whichever gender they feel most comfortable with. But for me in my trajectory, I needed that. I needed someone that maybe I wouldn't have been comfortable with in the past, to kind of break that misconception or discomfort and grow from that. So it's always the things that makes me most uncomfortable that make me grow the most. And yeah. So I live by that very strongly.
Yeah. And I think that's coming through in your story, is that you lean into those things that you know are going to take you up to the next level, which definitely. I love. And we've said it at the beginning, like, this is a sensitive topic. We completely respect that this could be triggering for some people. And I bet you there was even a time in your life where you couldn't fathom coming out with this and writing a chapter of a book on this, but now is the right time for you. So I know the book hasn't been out for too long, but what has the response been like? Have you been hearing from readers, and is it connecting with people in the way that you'd hoped?
Yeah, everyone has been so wonderful. The book came out the week of my race, and it was a stressful and anxiety inducing week, just because I knew kind of once it's out, there's nothing you can do about it. And then there's just pre-race jitters. So there's a lot going on. But honestly, like, once it went out, it was just a relief, and only just getting the messages from people and the support, it's just kind of reaffirmed that. And I've just been really grateful for the community.
Well, one of the goals that you shared with us in preparation for this podcast was that you hope to open up more conversations about childhood abuse, or whatever trauma a person may be experiencing or has experienced in the past. And a conversation is two-sided, right? It requires someone to feel safe enough to share their story, but it also requires someone able to receive what is being shared with them, which is also very, very important. So I'd like to ask you, what advice would you give to someone who has been entrusted as the receiver of someone's story? What do you do? What don't you do? like, from the person that is hearing somebody share, what advice would you give?
Yeah, I think that's such an important question, just especially, I think, as time goes on, these conversations are going to be coming up more, and not just necessarily this topic, but any kind of difficult topics that people might feel a bit uncomfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I guess, firstly, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. It's like, don't feel ashamed of that. It's a heavy topic, and it might be a topic that you don't know anything about, and that can be uncomfortable, but it might be a topic that you also have some connection to. And so I would be gentle with yourself. Most of the times, it's not about really, like, there's not really a right thing to say. There's of course some wrong things to say. Mm-hmm. I'd say, like, bringing up any of your own experiences, I would really gauge the time and place for that. This person that is divulging this information to you, may have taken a long time to do that. And it's a very It could be very kind of near and dear to their heart. And it could just kind of veer towards minimizing it if there's new stories that are coming in. That topic, I guess, of course, coming from a non-judgmental point of view as best as you can, and maybe even being honest about that surprised me, or that, this makes me uncomfortable because I actually have never talked to someone about this type of topic. I think the best thing you can do is say, thank you for telling me that. I really appreciate it. That must have been very difficult for you. And what do you need from me? Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be anything further than that. The last thing that a lot of people do want to get is advice. It's something that they've probably been sitting with for a long time, and they know all the things that they could do or should do, quote unquote. Really they're confiding in you, just for a safe space and, for someone to share that secret with them.
So that is what I really want to focus on, is creating that safe space. So I'm hearing from you just accepting, acknowledging, receiving, asking them what they need rather than being the fixer and offering a million suggestions. And letting the moment be about their story and not bringing in your own stories to the conversation in that moment.
Yeah, you summarized it great. And I think also, like, just that last piece is you are receiving something that might be heavy, making sure that you're taking care of yourself as well afterwards, and creating boundaries if you need to, if you can't be that individual for that person. Of course, we just want to make sure, like, I want to make sure if I was divulging anything to anyone that they also have this space to take care of themselves. And so, yeah, I think boundaries are really important.
As you were choosing to share your story, were there, you know, certain tests that you would give somebody to find out if they were a safe person? Like, do you have any thoughts? And again, what your experience is may not be what anybody else experience was, but what did you do to kind of test the waters to see if someone was worthy of, not worthy, but that you could feel safe sharing their story?
Sure. Like, I, in the very beginning, told a very few select people, and they were people that I trusted very well. If there were any, kind of as time went on and I got more comfortable, more, less kind of triggered by even just telling my own story, I would kind of gauge with that individual and other things I'd told them in the past and how they reacted, how, like, it was able to give them kind of some secret information that didn't end up getting anywhere else. So those are little things that you can kind of just to gauge that individual. But I think with that said, we can expect something to go a certain way, but we can't predict how someone will react, and that's okay too. And, I just think making sure that you do have a resource if you do tell someone and that individual doesn't react in the way that you were expecting and might actually make you feel worse. I did have people like that, and I was able to, I had other resources that I could connect with to kind of help me through that experience. I think that really just focusing on who are those safe people to start with, is the most important.
Well, you know, you're talking about a process, right? Like, as in running, not every race is going to go great. You're going to have some that were uncomfortable, and you didn't get to the point of putting your story out in print for the world without going through the process of telling it in more intimate moments with different people. And like you said, you can't predict, but I guess I'm asking these questions because I see myself potentially more as the receiver. And so you really want to make sure, at least I do, that if I'm running with somebody, for example, and we're on a trail and they feel impressed to share, how can I create that environment and then hold that in trust, in confidence, but also, like you said, supporting my own resiliency as well, because that can be very heavy.
Definitely.
So
yeah, and it can it can be like difficult depending on like that relationship. It depends on the relationship that you have with that person too, right? And, but even like, I'm just thinking of another piece of it is like even just having a follow-up with that person that did share their story, if you do feel like you have the capacity for that, is always something that I really appreciated in the process.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I think that we want to know what to do as a receiver of somebody's story, but I'm sure that there are times where it's inappropriate, like settings where it's inappropriate. Like you don't show up to a run group for the first time and start telling everybody, you know, intimate secrets about yourself, right? And so there's like, have you sort of, you've touched on a few things already, like you develop a level of trust with somebody with smaller things, you have a relationship with them. But maybe talk a little bit about some of the steps you took, maybe with like professional help first before sort of getting to the point where you're writing it in a book and telling friends.
Of course. Like I said, running did not just heal me. I wish it was but I pretty much immediately sought out therapy, and was very, that was one thing. I know that the resources can be slim depending on where you are and what access you have to them, but therapy was integral to my healing journey. It had to be someone that was completely out of the kind of my personal life and a professional that could deal with my situation and really just provide a safe space for me to talk kind of like endlessly about some of this stuff, but that you really, it isn't maybe the most appropriate setting and with personal relationships. And I really wanted to honor that with my personal relationships and not trauma dump on people. I wanted to have that separate. Of course I had my friends that I could confide in, and support system, but, I made sure to set those boundaries and, they're really like, there's different types of therapy. If, I will say like, if for the podcast, if there is anyone that has any similar experiences of anything that I have mentioned, I'm more than happy if they do want to direct message me to provide them direction for resources. And even if it's not in my area, I can actually just kind of give an idea of what options are out there and what type of therapy to be looking for.
That's really, really kind of you.
Gracious of you. Yeah. You've obviously, you run through the refiner's fire and your wisdom and your perspective is really impressive. As we start to wrap up this podcast, I'm going to go back to your book or your segment of this book and read another excerpt because this is one of the things I love to do. Because this passage just, it's so good. Regardless, so you're talking here about running at CCC and you talk about, have I left Italy yet? Am I in Switzerland? I don't know where I am. But you expressed something that I've personally felt, and I'm sure a lot of trail runners have felt as well. Regardless, the mountains before me are jagged and imperfect, strong and unmoving. Each peak is a reminder of the struggles I have overcome, the valleys indicative of the lows I faced. The scars of the trail mirror the scars in my heart. Each wound tells a story of endurance beyond a physical domain. Although, just like nature, these parts of me interlace, each necessary to feel whole. My stomach is in knots, and yet I am like smoke in the wind. A sense of calm begins to rush over me as I become in sync with nature's grooves, flowing through the trails in perfect harmony. Oh, that just gives me shivers. Because that's kind of the holy grail of just, you know, flowing with the mountain and with the trails in perfect harmony. I had the privilege of spending some time with you in Edmonton last week and actually ran into you literally on the trails and you were running with a smile on your face before you even knew that it was me coming towards you, flowing in perfect sync along the Edmonton River trails. And so I really hope that The rest of this season allows you to flow in sync through the stereos of Western states and through the rest of the trials and trials of your life. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with as we close this episode?
Well, thank you first for reading that excerpt. I haven't like read my story since it's come out, or really like for months, since I went through the editing. Anytime I think about flow state, it just makes me feel really good. And so I'm appreciative of that. And I think what I would want to leave with the listeners is really just, it might not be easy kind of where you might feel that you are, but I know that a lot of people say time heals all wounds, but I think it's actually like time and gentleness and support and consistency and self-love. I think there's just so many different things that really are just so integral. It's really just that we're all so unique and we're all going through our different processes. And so just be gentle with yourself through that process and know that it does get better. It will 100%. I am 1,000% confident with saying that, just from my own experiences, when I thought that there was absolutely no way that it could get better. It did. It just took time.
Yeah. So where can we buy this book? It's called Run for Your Life. And it just came out last month, right?
Yes. Yeah. So in Edmonton, Audrey's has books, but it is on Amazon. Oh. There is a link in my profile, and I don't know, maybe you guys could put a link as well.
Absolutely. We will.
Yep. Awesome.
And what about you? You said you're open to people reaching out to you if they have
definitely
questions and want more information on possibly which professionals to seek out, but where can they find and follow you online?
Pretty much I'm mostly on Instagram. So Prissy Forgy. I just want to let everyone know I'm not a licensed psychologist, but I'm 100% open to providing resources.
Hey, well, thank you so much, Priscilla, for coming on the podcast, sharing your story, being open to talking and being an amazing runner that you are. So best of luck at Western States and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.